I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and, of course, the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is, the publisher of Investing in Bizarro World and Bizarro World, which is the Marvel Universe version of Investing in Bizarro World. This is the 368th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk the biggest cover-up possibly it is since the Watergate scandal. We're going to talk about the war on again, off again. Gold, silver is the bottom in. The opportunities in the junior space. A lot going on, even though it's the summer doldrums. Never a dull moment. Mr. Hodge, let's get into all that. But first and foremost, how goes you, sir?
Doldrums is right. Had a bit of a sell-off over the past week in multiple asset classes. We will talk about it. I'm doing great. Summer is here. I was just telling you the kids are finishing up school, ready to hit the pool. I'll be seeing you in Florida in a couple of weeks. So looking forward to that. How goes you and your family?
All is well. The wife is back from Alaska. Our middle child has moved in. I say child, but he's a 23-year-old young man. So him and his girlfriend are starting their life there. They're going to give that a go for a year, see how that goes. And excited that the summer is here on a personal note, right? It gets hotter. You put the pool to use a little bit more. I'm a big fan of sunshine and the heat. I love getting my workouts outside in the morning and the 100-degree heat here in Texas. So all those things are lining up. And look, professionally, things are starting to line up a little bit. Although in this market and with this administration, it could change by the time we're done with this podcast, right? So the latest is that President Trump has announced, well, this morning he announced that quote unquote language, it's the president, it's not me, folks. This is what he said. We're going to bomb the shit out of Iran. That's what he said, right? And they had this whole announcement yesterday. G.I. Joe Peter Hegseth was out there saying, you know, we're going to rule from the sky and do all the things that, you know, health. We're going to bring fury like it's never been brought before. And then, you know, 3-4 hours later, Mr. Trump puts out a statement saying, we have a deal. The bombing is off. Your great president has called it off. Iran has capitulated and we're going to make a deal. And, you know, we'll have a signing ceremony here soon. So the markets immediately turned around, right? Like they have every single time that we get one of these announcements, for better or worse, which leads me into the metals. Look, gold touched the 4,080 level just yesterday. It's rallying some $141 on the news, back up above the 4,200 level. Silver back up. It's up $4, up at the $67 level, pushing that $68, $69 level, which is the 200-day moving average. So that's a significant technical recovery. Dollar index, of course, back below 100 at 99.5, the last that I checked. And the overall indices are flying ahead of the SpaceX IPO tomorrow. So I say all that to say that the market is being very clear to this administration about what it wants. And what it wants, it's peace. And what it wants is for energy to continue to flow through the Strait of Hormuz. It wants fertilizer prices to come down even more. It wants sulfur prices, sulfuric acid prices, to come down even more. And basically, the world wants some stability, which don't we all, right? It feels like a whiplash every single hour with the headlines. And, you know, what we do is we advise people on what we see in the market and what we think where the opportunities are. We have to keep track of this stuff so we don't get the luxury of just turning off for the week and just drowning out the noise and saying, well, I don't need the money this week. I'll just check back next week. This is a lot, you know, to take in. We got to stay on top of it. So, yeah, I hope that once again that we get some stability, and I hope that this sticks, and I hope that, you know, cooler heads prevail. We shall see. I want to hear your thoughts on that, but I do want to talk technicals with you once I get your thoughts on that, because a pretty significant week and a volatile one in the metal space that I'd love to chat about.
There's a lot going on. Yeah, you tell me where you want to go and how much time you want to spend on it. I guess I'll rewind the tape a little bit to the jobs number last week, after which the bond yield spiked up, and that's what precipitated The sell-off that we've seen in the S&P, and a lot has happened since then. So the S&P started selling off. Volatility went up. I've been saying for a couple of weeks that, you know, volatility was below where it was when the Iran war started 3-4 months ago. It was well below 20. It spiked up to just about 20 on the VIX. We got a CPI number this week, just yesterday, 4.2%. So that's sort of at cycle highs on the CPI, the inflation number. No surprise, given that oil has been elevated and commodities, as we've been talking about, have been elevated, aluminum, copper, et cetera. And the dollar has strengthened up sort of to the 100 level. We can talk more about all that stuff. Over to the metals from a macro level, over the past couple of months, you've seen the rates tick up, both the 10-year and the 2-year.
Yep.
The 2-year very much signaling that the federal funds rate should be higher. It's significantly higher than the current federal funds rate, which is at like 3.5% to 3.75%, while the 2-year is up over 4%, right? So telling the Fed that it really should be hiking rates. You had the ECB hike rates, I think, for the first time since 2023 or 2024, if memory serves. And inside of all that, there's confusion, right? Because I think what you can expect now, you know, believe the unbelievable or not, is a slowdown in the rate of inflation, right? And so the market is struggling to make or know what to do with that, which is what I think continued or exacerbated the sell-off, because it's probably, at least on a monthly, a year-over-year basis, not going to be above 4.2%, that number you just got yesterday, when the number comes out in June. And so then you have to start talking about disinflation or deflation, which has rung true in the metals and the commodities as well. The softs have started to sell off a bit. Mm-hmm. Copper has come down from $6.50, $6.60 to $6.20 or wherever it's at. Has held in there better than gold and silver. And I was saying last week, in fact, I think that was the subject line of the Bizarro World when it went out this week, is gold better than silver, better than copper. And you could see that. Excuse me, it was the opposite way.
Copper better than
gold, but better than silver, right? So, and silver sold off pretty hard there to the low 60s, which you were just saying. And so, gosh, maybe I should break out my charts here in a second, but you've also had sort of a compression of the yield curve as well. So, you know, starting the year, there was much more space between the 10-year and the 2-year. And as we progressed, the yield curve has started to compress. That signals a couple of things. One, the market is confused. One of the reasons it's compressed is because the 10-year has come down while the 2-year has remained elevated. That means slowing growth ahead. And so that's maybe the last piece of the puzzle there, is you're also going to likely see slowing growth in the second half of the year because of the high commodity prices and the high oil prices that we just saw, which gum up the gears of the economy. And so the market, i.e. the S&P index, which was just at all-time record highs, looks at that and it's saying, whoa, we're going to see slowing growth and the inflation rate is going to go down. And it doesn't like that double whammy of slowing growth and disinflation, even if it's only going to be for a month or two. And so buckle up, it could be a rough second half of July or second half of June, July and August before we get back to some sort of rising inflation and rising growth later in the year, the first quarter of 2027. All that is the pieces of the puzzle. Some of them we're still waiting to see how they exactly fit together. Yeah. And I think that's what's led to the rise in volatility. And make no mistake, some charts definitely broke as well. Like gold, I don't want to say crash, but it fell through support at 4,400, went right down and touched its trend line. And so I guess I'll stop there for a second, catch my breath, and see if you want to look at charts or ask about anything else.
No, let's definitely look at charts. I mentioned Jeff Curry last week, commodity, you know, legend and former Goldman guy, who had said, you know, about 3 weeks ago that he actually thought we see $4,000 gold, but then we see $10,000 gold. And hell of a call, because it fell right down to that 4,075, 4,080 level, and a lot of people thought it was going to crash through 4,000 and then put a 3,900 handle in. On today's news, it did, a beautiful reversal, up $140 today, back up above the $4,200 level. I want to go back to the CPI report that you mentioned, and the one thing we didn't touch on, you talked about the growth and the slowdown in the second half of the year. That contrasts with the jobs report that we just got. The jobs report that we got was actually in part what led to the first part of the sell-off in gold this week. It was a pretty damn robust jobs report. Now, we could argue about the quality of that employment and the quality of the jobs and the sectors that are benefiting the most from it and whether or not it's because people need two or three jobs just to get by in this economy. But it was a much stronger than expected jobs report. So if we're going to get disinflation in the second half of the year and we're going to get treasury rates, the 10-year specifically, below that critical 450 level, which it's right at 4.45 right now. Not a coincidence that the metals are responding. Does that give the incoming Fed chairman cover to, at the very least, hold rates and maybe talk dovishly, even if he's just talking the market up? Because his mission is very clear. You could believe that he's independent and that, you know, the Fed works independent of the Trump administration. And we'll talk about independent institutions within government that are supposed to provide the checks and balances that clearly are not. I believe that Kevin is one of those guys. I used to call Jerome, so it's only fair to call Kevin. I believe that he's one of those guys that's going to follow the line. And Trump's been very clear about what he wants and expects. He wants lower rates. So does he get the cover for that if we do have disinflation and we do have slower growth? Does he then get to say growth is now slowing? Inflation was transitory. We know they like that word. He already said Powell was too slow to cut rates. And he actually said he thought there was room in the second half for a potential cut. Does he get cover for that? Does it matter at the end of the day? And that's the last question, right? Does it matter?
He gets to say it, but he doesn't get to do it because, as I was talking about a couple of episodes ago, they got to vote. Like, he can't unilaterally cut the rates. He can jawbone them down. And he can talk about everything you just said. And the market will slightly corroborate that because inflation will be slowing by the time we get, you know, the next Fed meeting. I think they skip July and then they come back in August or something like that. I'd have to look. But could be able to talk and say, look, we had a short-term peak of inflation in CPI terms at 4.2% in May, and it's been coming down since then. So he can talk about inflation coming down, but it'll still be in the high 3%, right? Yeah. Nearly twice their mandated level of 2%. And so he's not going to get the votes. I was telling you last time, it was like, I don't know, 11-1 or and 10-2, something like that, you know, in favor of holding rates where they were. He's not going to get a majority of the Fed governors and presidents to vote for lowering rates, but he can jawbone it down. That doesn't matter. I mean, I guess words matter. You were saying earlier about the president and how he was talking, and the market still believes him, despite the fact that he wishy-washes every single day. And
on every single every thing.
On literally every day. I mean, I've seen tweets now where it's like his tweet at 9 a.m. and then his tweet at 4 p.m. And they're like complete opposites. And that happens on multiple days on multiple issues. But at the end of the day, he's still the president. And Kevin, as you called him, is still going to be the Fed chair. And the market hinges on their words and parses everything they say. So he might be able to jawbone it down. We got to wait for the numbers to come out is what I would say. Like, I'm looking at the 2-year now. It had a pretty wide candle to the downside today as we record June 11th in the year of our Lord, 2026. And that's the reason that you were able to have a bounce in things that had sold off, as you already went over. The S&P up pretty staunchly and gold and silver rebounding. But that doesn't negate the numbers, right? It doesn't negate that. The GDP itself is going to be slowing and inflation is going to be ticking down and the market's not going to like that. I didn't mention earnings earlier. They're set to slow down as well after the second quarter. So you had a lot of things going for the market this quarter. You had GDP expanding at likely a 3% rate. We haven't got it yet because we got to wait for the end of June, but it's going to be around 3%. Get inflation going up to 4.2%. As I just said, the market likes when both inflation and growth are going up. And you had pretty good earnings. Like, look at some of the earnings growth on sectors of the S&P. I think like the IT sector had earnings growth of nearly like 50% or something like that, or 40%. And the same with communication services. And you had NVIDIA printing really good numbers. And that's why you had that melt up despite the war going on. The next quarter's earnings, but they're not going to grow as fast. Particularly in the IT sector. And so there's going to be a lot more negatives, contracting growth, potentially falling inflation. Inflation really is the wild card because we don't know what's going on with the war.
Yep.
Oil has come down from the $100 a barrel it's at, but spiked up overnight when we said we were going to take over Karg Island and stuff like that. So you can't really predict that because it's unpredictable. We don't know what they're going to do. But then the earnings growth are going to slow. And so I don't know if I'm giving you an answer or not, but I talked about what Kevin, I think, is going to say. I don't think he can cut rates. I can tell you what the market is pricing in at last check. And again, things are changing pretty quickly these days, but it was no change until December. And this is how confused the market is. Then the next highest probability was a hike, a quarter point hike, but only by 43%. So not even greater than a 50% chance of a hike. That was just the highest probability, 43% for a hike. And then it was like mid 30 somethings for no hike. So the market doesn't really know either. So certainly uncertain and volatile times.
Yep. And I do want to talk technical levels on gold and silver and where we're at now. But I want to get one thing before I forget it. It flies away from my brain. Does it matter was the question. And sure, the answer is, of course it matters. But do we know exactly what's going to happen? Of course, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. Not on that front, not on the macro, when it comes to the overall indices, or when it comes to rates, or when it comes to growth, or when it comes to inflation. Growth, we have pegged pretty well. That's pretty predictable. Inflation should slow down. That it is a wild card, right? But the one thing we know, and this is what, you know, for me, being in the resource space exclusively, this is where I'm laser focused. The one thing I know is whether gold goes back to 4,000 or goes right back to 5,000, ultimately, for the way that I allocate capital, is not consequential. Now, it is consequential in the short term, right? In weeks and months, where you can have a slowdown and your portfolio can get cut by 50%. And yeah, I'd rather my portfolio not get cut by 50%. That's the game we play. But fundamentally, it doesn't matter, folks. The debt is still $39 trillion. We still got to service a lot of that this year. Think of it as a refinance of that debt. That doesn't give a lot of room to increase rates. Now, do I think a rate increase is warranted? Absolutely. What I think ultimately doesn't matter, right? The market might call that bluff with all of the refinancing of the debt that we have to do just this year, especially at the tail end of this year. The demand for the things like uranium and silver and lithium, that's the copper, that's in place. It like that trend will continue because of the structural deficits that we talk about all the time. So when it comes to the thesis, when you zoom out and you can take a 6 month, 12 month, 2 year approach, this all becomes noise. The danger is when you're in positions that you need to liquidate within the next 2 weeks or the next month or two, then all of this becomes very consequential because, yeah, gold could be at 5,000 here in 3 months. It could also be at 3,700, right? I would still feel like a bull market's coming. I still feel like we're going to see brand new all-time highs in the precious metal space within the next, you know, 9 to 12 months. But like you said earlier, it could be a volatile couple of months here in the near term. So it's perspective, it's context, folks. It's structuring your portfolio in a way where, you know, hopefully you allow yourself the luxury of time. Rick Rule has that great saying where, you know, you got to keep yourself in the game. And as long as you have enough time to see your thesis play out, if your thesis is correct, you're going to do well. But be absolutely sure that you can get caught, you know, in a situation where all of a sudden you gotta liquidate something and the market's just not favorable to you. And that's, you know, that's the part where managing that aspect of your portfolio is important. And it's something, you know, I talk about all the time. I tend to hold too long because I don't mind the looking ahead a year or 2 years from now and seeing that it's likely to work out the way that I think it's going to work out. It doesn't always work out that way, but when it does, those are good bets to make, and they've kept me, you know, in the game for almost 16 years. So not without bumps and bruises, believe you me, but
I was just going to say, you also size larger than a lot of people too, in terms of the percentage of your portfolio that individual positions take up. And so that cuts both ways, obviously. Both ways, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're real smart on the way up and everybody loves you, and on the way down, it's more painful for the simple fact that I don't spread it out across 20 companies. I do it in the newsletter to give people 15 to 20 ideas of companies that I think have a good shot of making people money. But that also allow subscribers to look at different companies that have different risk profiles, right? But my personal allocations, folks, are heavily weighted usually to 3 or 4 companies, heavily weighted, and then heavily weighted to the next 3 or 4. And then that's really it. Like that's really as far as I go. And if something doesn't work, then sure, you rotate out, but doesn't work for me means something different than doesn't work for other people. Doesn't work for me means I don't believe that we can, get a proper rate of return for my capital in this stock anymore, because for whatever reason, it doesn't mean today's share price is down 50% from a month ago, so it's a bust. I'm more concerned about whether or not the company's adding value. We'll talk about this in the premium portion of the podcast. Are they adding value? Do I see significant catalysts in the near term? Is there a good chance, to make something happen in the near term that gets the stock back where it needs to be? If all those boxes are being checked off, I just kind of look at the price and I know the value of what I have and understand what I own. But that's not easy to do, especially if you're just getting going in this space, or if you've never seen your capital go down by 50%, because in the junior resource space, that's part of the course. Almost every single one of my wins, and I dare say all of them, the big ones, all of them have seen 50 and in some 70% drawdowns at one point.
I told my wife how much my portfolio was down yesterday, and she was like, in one day? And I was like, yeah, in one day. And she was like, holy shit, like, hard to believe. But
and you're more conservative than I am, so you can imagine when mine was down.
So I'm going to get there. That's a good way to sort of distinguish between our two services as well. So Shameless plug, I suppose. Gerardo just laid out how he sort of does things and how he allocates. I do allocate a bit more conservatively, but I show you in both letters, foundational profits every month, how much I own of each position. And if you're a lifetime member of Underground Alpha, starting last quarter, the beginning of 2026, I started printing that table as well, how much I own of each position. And there are rules. So not that I'm some genius, but having rules in terms of portfolio weights allows me to know like when things get outsized. And so sometimes I sell just because the positions are getting too large. And I've done that a couple of times recently with gold and gold stocks. I did it in October, November last year. And I did it in April of this year, taking profits off the table on things like GLD and GDXJ, not selling everything. And that's another thing that you should keep in mind. Like this, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing game, right? If you've got a position in a gold equity ETF like GDXJ, and it gets up to 17, 18, 19% of your portfolio, there's no harm in knocking it back to 12% or 10% or something like that. And we did that. And so in some ways, we didn't insulate ourselves entirely. I mean, my portfolio was down as well, but we had taken some profits off the table, banked that in cash, and are holding it. You know, we had a 26% cash coming into this month, right? And so when I saw the market starting to do what it was doing last Friday, I immediately sent out alert. You can buy back into GDXJ, right? Now it's at a more attractive level, back to your point of knowing what you own, et cetera. Did the same thing with uranium stocks, and we can talk more about that in the premium portion as well. And so the difference between how you and I do things and some of the flavors of the publications there. But yeah, by all means, portfolio construction is important. Knowing your risk tolerance is important. Knowing the price and the valuation levels at which you're comfortable owning things is important. All that stuff's important.
Yeah, I laughed because I don't think ever in the history of my life have I had 26% of my portfolio in cash. ever. But again, my risk tolerance is very, very high, folks. It just is. It is what it is. It makes for amazing wins. It makes for painful drawdowns. Overall, thankfully, knock on wood. So far it's worked out well, but again, you have to know the game you're playing, the consequence of it. And yes, you can be richly rewarded for getting things right. And you got to know when you get things wrong, to be able to diagnose it and break it down and say, is the thesis broken? Is the company broken? Or is this just softness in the sector where everything's getting sold off? What we've seen in the past month, including the metals, has absolutely been softness in the sector where margin calls are forcing funds and are forcing groups, including governments, to fund their needs by selling the reserves of the stuff that's liquid. What's the stuff that's liquid? It's the gold. It's gold. The silver. It's even the Bitcoin, right? It's been liquidated to levels where it was something like in the 50s. And I don't follow Bitcoin too closely, obviously. But I know that, you know, there was a big rally, and Chris Curl, our in-house expert, to 80. And he said it's a false rally. It's a bear trap. And sure enough, it turned right back around. And during this liquidation the past month, it's been pounded back to the 50s and the 60s now. So if you know why the selling is happening, it doesn't make the portfolio look any better after the selling is done, but it does give you an indication that once sentiment improves, if your companies are adding value, if your holdings are adding value, then when the re-rate comes, because the market gets better again, and it always does, folks, it always does. Once things pass and once things settle and the buying comes back in, the companies that are going to catch the bids are the ones that added value during that soft period in the market. And believe you me, you could be down 50%. And in this space, you could make that up in a week. You could also be down 50% for a year or two and have to wait before you make that back up. So again, know what you own, know why you own it. Don't confuse share price for value. And trim a little on the way up and trim a little on the way down and outline your risk tolerance and pick your fighter, as they say, right?
Yep.
Good.
What else we want to talk about? A couple more things, maybe some shameless plugs. You mentioned Rick Roll will be at the World Symposium, July 6th through 10th. I put links in the podcast article last week. I'll do it again this week. You can't attend in person because they're sold out, but you can attend virtually. I know some of you took me up on that because I get the reports of the people who buy from those links. And so hope to see you there, or maybe at least virtually. There's you can watch virtually, and we'll have a virtual booth on the conference website as well as in person. If you don't want to manage your portfolios in the way that Gerardo and I have been describing for the past 10 minutes, as a paid member of Bizarro World, you might not be, because this is the free portion, but just last month I put up a report about a permanent portfolio that you can allocate to cash, gold, bond, and income-related equities and equities, 25%, 25%, 25%. Did I say it four times? Anyway, four times to make up 100.
And 25%.
and then you rotate on a quarterly or biannually or annual basis. And you can avoid having to think about it as much while still knowing what you own and getting exposure to the sectors that Gerardo and I talk about more granularly. A friend of ours has sent a report this week from Scotiabank saying that they had done an analysis of gold equities, and they were oversold by many metrics. And I'll read you the quote that was at the top of their report. It says, "We have analyzed several valuation metrics, free cash flow yield, enterprise value to EBITDA, price to cash flow, and price to net asset value, or PNAV. To see where gold equities are trading today versus past valuations all the way back to the 1970s. In short," Scotiabank says, "the gold equities are trading at very attractive valuations on these four metrics, and certainly at spot gold prices versus historical levels, again, all the way back to 1970s. They're talking mostly about major and mid-tier producers, but you can see that there's things to buy out there, whether that's the GDX or the GDXJ or individual gold names. And the sentiment was pretty bad. You might have seen the chart.
It was zero.
That's right. I forget the name of that index. I don't know. It's the Gold Bulls Index or
Gold Bull Index. Like, yeah,
that. It was zero. GBI. Essentially, meaning they couldn't find anyone that was bullish on the gold complex, right?
And so, it was zero, folks. For context, on a scale of 0 to 100, not like 0 to 5, 0 to 0, right? But it was like from 0 to 100. How do you feel? And it was like zero. Yeah. So when you see things like that, And again, I start getting texts from my friends, and they start filling out job applications again, and they all of that. Like you know that things are at or near a bottom, and it doesn't mean that it corrects right away. It doesn't mean that it surges right away. Although I do think I'm gonna put my bring out my crystal ball out for a little bit.
Well, that's the we'll look at it.
And I absolutely think that we're in for a rip-roaring second half of the year in the precious metal space, despite what happens in the overall indices and the markets, because of the simple fact that I think a lot of the liquidation, the forced liquidation, has already happened. And frankly, because this Iran thing, it's going to cut one or two ways. I don't think a ground invasion. This is, and I'm no geopolitical expert. I'm going by one of the people I always reference on X is Joe Kent, the former National Counterintelligence Director. And so this is a gentleman that has been a war and has got all lost his wife in a war and has had all of the medals given to him and all of that. And he's smart. He's one of the ones that resigned from the cabinet when he found out about all these plans and all the things that we were wanting to give to Israel. He said, I'm not doing that. I can't do it in good conscience. But he's been very on top of it, saying, listen, a ground war is unsustainable. And we're like, sure, they'll get slaughtered, but a lot of our people are going to get slaughtered as well. There's no reason to do it. There's no upside. So I say that to say that it's not sustainable either way to cut off 90% of the world's energy flow through the strait. Just because, and the just because is you make up your own reason, right? I think it's a bunch of compromised politicians on both sides. We'll talk about that here in a second, but it's just not sustainable. So does it mean the war's over today or tomorrow? I don't know, clearly not with this administration, but I do know that a lot of the backtracking has been because I'm sure Trump has people telling him, okay, but it's not sustainable, and you're going to lose thousands of troops, American troops. And it's probably going to be the thing that wrecks the midterms. If the economy wasn't enough, if the Epstein thing wasn't enough, 2,000-3,000 American body bags for something that we just decided to do on behalf of another country isn't going to play well in America on either side of the political spectrum. So those are the reasons why I don't think it's sustainable. And I think that bodes well for the markets in the second half of the year.
Okay.
Technical
Want to look at
levels,
chart?
you got to do the
Oh, you
charts.
want to look at them?
Got to do
Okay.
it. Got to do it. Gold and silver, such an important week. We had a breakdown there, and are we still in a bull market in the mid to long term in both gold and silver?
Yeah, I mean, here's gold. I look at it much more often than silver, and I was drawing lines on it this week because I had a monthly issue to write, and I was writing about all this stuff. So, I mean, here's what happened with gold, right? You had all-time highs and euphoria back in the January period. You and I were together for that in Vancouver at conference time. Everybody was happy. Everybody went to PDAC in March, and then
Messed it up
on
for
the
everyone.
Messed it up for everyone with the curse of the Prospectors and Development Association of Canada, and things started to sell off after that. And they sold off pretty hard when the bombs started dropping here, right? Is when they start the last week of February, just about here, and that's when bond yields started going up, and then the dollar sold off a little bit, and they held up pretty well. They caught themselves right here at sort of. You can call it 4,400, but it's really 4,380 is the precise level. And that's a pretty good level. Like that's healthy level for miners and margins and all that sort of stuff. And the industry and the complex and those who participated in were sort of happy that that level held and it didn't go down further. But you were still way above the trend line. That's the
That
bottom line here. So the bottom line is the trend line for the gold bull market. You touch the bottom of the candles as they go up. And you can see where the trend for gold is, even though near-term support was at this 4,380 level, call it. What happened in the past week is it broke down pretty fast when those bond yields spiked up last week. You can see Friday, June 5th there, this candle. That was the jobs number, and that was the rate spiking up. And then it continued to go down after that. Did not hold support at all. Broke through it in one day. Closed below it, as you can see here. The wicks went below it here, but the closed levels, which is the bottom of the candle, not the wick, stayed right there. I mean, it closed below the support on Friday, and then just continued to go down all the way down to its trend line. And this is where it gets really scary, right? Because you need to hold the trend. Otherwise, you're in danger of falling, as you were saying earlier. I mean, the next sort of stopping point, I think, is 3,890, somewhere in,
Correct.
yeah, right about in there somewhere. Yeah, So, and it did close below that trend line. It picked it back up today, and so we're not out of the woods yet. I mean, what these two lines end up creating is a wedge, right? And you can wedge down here all the way almost into a point, right? You can see where the trend line would go, something like this. And then this support line comes over here. And it can wedge down. So you can see a consolidation of gold right at these prices. As long as we hold the trend, it's healthy. If we continue to close below this trend line that, call it 4,200, 41 and change, then you could see a drop much further down. And so too close to call right now, as they say, but that's what caused all the consternation. That's what called the zero sentiment in that gold bull index that we were just talking about. And the other things didn't help, the major macro things. So while I've got the chart up, here's the DXY, right? Sort of doing the same thing, wedging itself up, fell hard into the bombs dropping. And then war is good for the dollar. People start buying dollars or moving into dollars. And you can see there was an article on Bloomberg that I was writing about this week in my Foundational Profits issue. People are T-billing and chilling, Gerardo. There's like something like $7 trillion. There's like $7 trillion in T-bills. People content to just sit there because of this volatility and get whatever they're getting, 4 or 5% in the T-bills. That's a flight to dollars. And so this DXY has gone up to 100, bounced back down to its own trend line here. And is now back up near 100. You said closer to 99 than 100. Technically not, I guess 99.6. But anyway, this wants to be bullish and will continue to be bullish if the economy slows down, et cetera. And then the other thing is the bond yields, which are interesting to look at. We'll look at the two-year, which is more indicative of what Fed policy should be and what inflation is doing. And you can see that the bond market obviously knew that inflation was going up, right? I mean, it knew that inflation was going to come out above 4%, took itself right there to what the inflation rate is. 4.2% was the number I told you came out this week. And this is saying the Fed should be hiking, interest rates should be higher. I mean, you can see they came down today on the jawboning from the president that you were talking about. So tough to know where these are going to resolve. What else do you want to look at while I got it up?
Silver.
Yeah. See, I don't probably don't have lines on that. I'll show you how much I even look at it. It's about the same, right?
Yeah. So, same picture. That was going to be my point. It's a very similar looking chart is where I was going with that, right?
It's got even further to go to break trends. So silver could get weaker, which is why copper better than gold, better than silver.
Right.
Yeah, it could go down to the trend line. I mean, you can see $50 copper. It's got support here. Where's the biggest support? Somewhere around here-ish. Broke that. So it's going to do the same thing, but is more volatile, right? Like gold already touched this trend line. You could see silver get a little bit weaker. Not to say that's going to happen, but it could be. And then copper is the one that actually really held up nicely. And then I'll stop doing the chart thing. But and this is a wonderful chart. I mean, the trend line, you got to take it all the way back to 20 because that's when this copper super cycle started back in 2020. And you can see the trend is significantly below it. It held up here wonderfully above $6. The thing I would add about copper is we should be getting a Commerce Department report. And I'll stop sharing my screen now. We should be getting a Commerce Department report from the, you remember back to last July, copper was really volatile, and that's when the hoarding started on the COMEX. Trump was talking about the tariffs. He ended up not doing them, speaking about the back and forth of Mr. Trump. And this month he'll get the report from the Commerce Department that says, yes, we should be whatever, putting a tariff on copper because it's being either manipulated or because it's critical to the U.S. economy, et cetera. That's the Section 232 report. And then Trump will have a decision to make, right? Do I go forward with the tariffs? Do I not go forward with the tariffs? Bloomberg had a really long article about this in the past couple of weeks, too. And because of the back and forth nature of Mr. Trump, you know, this is what the Bloomberg article concluded. And it's confusing as fuck, Gerardo. They said Mr. Trump could enact the tariffs. Mr. Trump could not enact the tariffs. Mr. Trump could say he's going to enact the tariffs and then not do it. Like, okay, well, thanks for the help there, Bloomberg. So, I mean, that's where we're at in terms of the president and how he does things. So, but at the end of the day, I fall back onto something you said earlier. The structural deficits are real. the need for copper and lithium and uranium and zinc and cobalt and
rare earths, all the things.
Yeah, tungsten is getting really bad. There was a report this week from some business group saying it's all but impossible to get metals, critical metals out of China. And so all that stuff is still real. And that narrative will continue, obviously. Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%. And that was my point about, you know, in the mid to long term. And to summarize, folks, those charts right there are short term support. If we zoom out a year, we zoom out 2 years, we're in a clear bull market as far as the metals go. Be absolutely clear about that. Those charts are short-term charts that should give you an indication of, you know, where the next price action could be, might be, and the levels to look at. Hopefully some of that is helpful. But, you know, back to critical metals, there was a joint statement that was made yesterday in Paris at the G7 Critical Minerals Investment Forum. And basically it was like investors and financiers and industry stakeholders who have pledged, and it's just a pledge at this point, but they don't have a choice to combine efforts in the development of critical mineral projects across the G7 countries. And so when I talk about needs and wants, I like allocating capital to the things people need. The things we want are the things that we want. You could spend that when you make money, but spend money on that when you make it and you take profits. But the things we need to make the stuff that we need to make the economy that we want to build is the stuff that's just not going away. Those are trends that are going to continue for many, many years, and actually have, you know, bipartisan support. You know, if one of the few things that we get bipartisan support on, there was a bill signed this week that I believe now goes to the Senate, if I'm not mistaken, to get finalized. But it was a critical metals defense bill similar to this statement, which basically says the same thing, just it's U.S. specific. It's U.S. centric, right? And it says we need to do more if we're going to catch up to China. And, you know, Japan is a prime example of it. I was writing for Junior Resource Monthly. You have a new issue tomorrow. And a part of what I wrote is Japan has been doing this for 15 years with the rare earths, like signing contracts with Lynas, signing contracts with, you know, MP Materials and different groups and governments and financing projects, trying to be independent of Chinese critical metals dominance. And despite that, China this year cut 80% of the exports to them off. That's how vulnerable they are after 15 years, because it's not just about being able to find the stuff. You need to be able to refine it. You need to be able to process it. You need to have the intellectual capital and the infrastructure in place to be able to do all those things. And it's not a simple process, folks. And so it's going to take some time and a lot more capital and a lot more initiative to even put a dent into China's critical metals dominance. And so that is a theme that will continue for many, many years. And again, that's a theme and a trend that, one, is our friend, but two, it's our friend because it's got bipartisan support to accelerate permitting and financing. And we've talked about that many times on this podcast. I don't want to belabor the point, but it's something to keep your eye on. And that's definitely the forest, not the tree.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw, there's a big Reuters expose, I think last week, I'll send it to you if you haven't seen it, it was long, about how much China invests in the things that you say. It's not just finding the deposit, but I mean, in China, you can major in rare earths. Like, yeah. Reuters did this whole investigation across mm-hmm. U.S. and universities. There's no rare earths major in the United States.
No.
China's graduating like hundreds of kids per year that are focused just on rare earths and rare earth separation, in the process to separate them. They're positioning them in labs next to mines and refiners, so they can learn hands-on. And they had quotes in there from even some of the companies you mentioned, from Lynas and from the former CEO of Molycorp and Neo Materials, saying that if he hires these kids out of China, they require no training. If he
Correct.
Hires someone out of the U.S., 3 years of training.
Yeah.
And you can't even hire them out of China anymore because they started taking their passports and shit a couple
yep.
of months ago. Those stories were coming out mm-hmm. After the tariff stuff, January, February, things like that, where the scientists that know this stuff in China aren't even allowed to leave anymore. So, and they still control like 90% of the sector. So
yep.
it's not just going to take a long time. It's going to take a long time to make a dent into that. Yeah.
And that provides opportunities for us, folks. We can find companies that find this stuff and are able to extract it and are able to find an end user for it. You can do very, very well over the next several years.
Going to make my kids major in rare earths.
Hey, worse things, believe you me. I don't. I wanted to get into the Epstein thing, and I'll
try. We're getting long.
Yeah, we're getting long. I'll just be real brief. Look, I've said that the Epstein cover up was the biggest scandal since Watergate. I now believe that it's the biggest scandal, including Watergate. That I read of in modern times, right? If you call from the 70s on modern, and there was an article that just got the administration fuming that basically outlined in a very detailed way by the New York Times, in a very detailed way, how every branch and checks and balances within the White House, within the administration, I'm talking about the Department of Justice, the FBI, the Attorney General, the Vice President, the Chief of Staff, the President himself, every one of those groups that's supposed to work on behalf of the American people to protect victims and to bring predators to justice, basically made the Situation Room, the Epstein Room, for many, many months, trying to figure out how to confuse the American public and cover up allegations. And you know, I don't want to set someone off, and so I won't do the trigger warning thing. You can read the story yourself. But there were very specific allegations about President Trump in there. That, again, I don't want to get into whether he did it, didn't do it, whether they're substantiated, unsubstantiated. What I do know is that the response was to cover it up. And then when that wasn't working, the response is documented in this article. And again, it's documented really, really well. Was to bring everybody together, to get the FBI to fall in line, the DOJ to fall in line, Bondi, attorney generals, obviously, and J.D. Vance was the vice president that was supposed to be the shoe-in for the candidate in 2028. And not a coincidence that his chief of staff resigned today on the heels of this. So the article came out yesterday. The administration is not happy about it. There's a lot of allegations in there. If you care about, forget the parties, right? And forget just Trump himself. But what's troubling to me is the fact that every single branch and department that was supposed to provide justice and checks and balances for these victims colluded to figure out how to cover it up. It's disgusting. It's disgusting and rips at the moral fabric of our country, folks. Do both sides do it? I'm sure. At this level, it's absolutely sickening. So if they're willing to do this with kids, right? There's discussions in there about which videos would be okay to release and which ones they should hold back. There weren't discussions about, let's bring the people that perpetrated these crimes that are in these videos doing these disgusting things to justice. That wasn't even, you know, that wasn't a part of it. You haven't seen an arrest yet, have you?
No. No,
you haven't. Just Galeen. She got a puppy in yoga. She's cool. She's in minimum. It talks about her, why she got that transfer, how that came about, how that was coordinated and why that was done. And so it's a troubling time on many fronts in this country. On the 250th anniversary of this great country, I still believe there's so much that we can all individually contribute to make our communities better, to be more vigilant, to be more accountable, to be less partisan, to be, you know, just more decent with each other. And I think that is how little by little you change and you grow out from that. And again, I've said it a million times, I'm the eternal optimist, but I do believe we have more in common than we have differences. And look, the media and social media isn't your friend when it comes to highlighting those things, believe you me. So good to disconnect. We got the World Cup going. Hopefully we can unite against, you know, a global event that is supposed to bring people together in the spirit of football. And so yeah, that's my rant on that.
Well, I just checked the scores. Mexico is winning 2-0 with 9 minutes left.
Let's
so
go.
You can go on that. But no, you could tell that obviously there was no accountability. There hasn't been any accountability. You could tell that it was rotten up to the highest level from when Epstein was arrested in Florida all the way to him not hanging himself in prison all the way through to the modern day with you know, some powerful gentleman having to step out of the spotlight, but no real accountability in terms of trials, justice, et cetera. And to put a finer point on it, I was going to bring it up. I haven't read the article you're talking about, but I most certainly will. I saw this week, you remember a couple of weeks ago, we were going through some of the names, and one of the names was Kathy Rumler, who was like, you
she's
know,
she's balling.
Buddy.
Kathy's
buddy, buddy
balling.
With Epstein
and Obama.
He was sending her gifts. you know, luxurious watch bands and all sorts of stuff, cutesy emails back and forth. She's the top lawyer at Goldman Sachs. And she was, that's correct. Chief lawyer, absolutely. Or staff lawyer for the Obama administration.
Point person.
Speaking of both sides-ism. And she stepped down, or she announced she was going to step down from that position at Goldman Sachs. Comes out this week, Goldman Sachs CEO is asking her to stay. She's going to stay on as a fucking advisor, Gerardo. So you can tell that to the highest levels of banks, to the highest levels of Department of Justice, to the highest level of policing institutions, FBI, CIA, to the highest level of legislative branches, executive branches, the whole cart's rotten, man. And whether that started with one bad apple or not is hard to say, but there's a lot of rotten apples now. And it's why there's distrusted institutions. It's why there's distrust in politicians. It's why we're in a fourth turning. And it's not going to get any better until lots of those folks get out of there and we get some new leadership. But the problem is, there's no good, I don't see good candidates, right? Like I look around and I see who's running for governor of California. And I don't know if you followed the Maine debacle with the fucking Susan Collins on the right and the gentleman with the Nazi tattoos who roughed up his previous girlfriends, being embraced by the Democrats just because he's a Democrat. I mean, who would want to run? This guy, anyway, I won't get into the whole Maine Democrat Senate race, but yeah, there's not a lot of good choices out there, man.
It's definitely tough. Mm. I am, you know, sometimes you got to burn institutions down to the ground to build them back up better, right? And I think I
Tree of Liberty, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and you know the whole quote. I think we're in the midst of that right now, and I think this is what it looks like, and unfortunately, that comes with all the stuff that we're seeing. Back to Miss Rumler, whatever her name is. She's gonna walk away with $25 million for her work last year, $80 million in stock options. Still stay on the side as a consultant, baby. American justice. American.
It's crazy,
justice.
Man.
It's crazy. Anyhow, listen, bull market's still intact. Pullbacks aren't fun for the portfolio or for the prices. It's temporary, folks. Know what you own. Know why you own it. Define your risk tolerance. Same thing we say every week. Everything is still going the way that it's going. There's some opportunities out there. So let's get into some companies that are adding value during the softness in the premium portion of the podcast. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 368th episode of our weekly therapy session called Investing in Bizarro World. Go Mexico, go Team USA. I hope my Cubs start playing like they played the first month of the season, because we've been atrocious for the last month of the season. And my God, I'm not a diehard Spurs fan, but last night's loss was tough. The biggest single comeback in NBA Finals history. I could not believe it. So go Spurs, man. I'm rooting for those kids. They're tough, but they blew one last night.
Sloppy in the last minute. I will say that, you know, I've been watching and they had a chance to win it. I mean, really, they were up a point with like 11 seconds left and they got the ball. All the dude, his last name is Fox, he just had to hold the ball and he went for a layup. It got blocked. The Knicks got the ball back and they ended up scoring.
Don't get like, me going again. Fox ball. Is, it's yeah, them. It's, he's on my naughty list, man. But
anyway,
yeah, let's see what game five brings. A lot to like in the sports sector, a lot not to like. It's been tough for me on my side of things with my Cubs play like trash, but hopefully it turns around. We're still not at the halfway point of the season. And again, we're the best team in baseball the first month of the season. We're the worst team in baseball, I think, the last month, at least in my mind. So
strikes and gutters.
That's it. Ebbs and flows, kind of like the junior resource base, folks. Have a good one. This was 368. Take care. Enjoy your summer out there. Have a great week, folks.
See ya.